You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
We have no pride of ownership. We're super hopeful that the successes that we've had and what we've learned can help power really a revolution in capturing high quality data at scale about the fish that we love to catch from recreational anglers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guidepost. So if y'all have been listening to the podcast as they came out, the last one that you probably listened to was Shop Talk number 2, and you found out the Victoria's Secret fragrance that Bailey Short prefers to keep no-see-ums away. And we also decided to start a support group for men who let their wives back their boats down the ramps, because we think we could significantly lower the divorce rates in many southern states. So we're gonna start working on that support group. But this one, we're gonna go total data nerd, and we're gonna dive deep. And we have some crazy exciting stuff to tell you about the app, the Got One app that y'all have heard us talk about before. And I'm super excited to have my friend and partner in crime on this stuff, Lou, is joining us today. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Tony. It's great to be here with you.
Okay. So, man, I got to meet your son. What a great young man. Got to meet one of your buddies. We ate buckets of delicious food. I sent you to the grocery store that my grandfather used to take me at as a kid. You had your first muffalata.
Muffalata, baby.
Dude, I understand why diabetes is a thing in Louisiana, right? Like, I would be 600 pounds if I lived there. Food is life there, Lou. It really is.
It's so good, man. When we walked into that place to buy the muffalata where you told us to go, and I walk into it, what looks like a liquor store, and I'm thinking to myself,
that's why my grandparents went there.
This is a gourmet sandwich place? What the hell? And I go up, and there's like a refrigerator of these pre-wrapped sandwiches. And I go in there to pull one out. And mind you, this is like 10 o'clock at night because we're fishing the next morning. And this woman pokes her head around from like the rum aisle and says, "You want to buy two. And you want to put them in the refrigerator because they're going to be better the second day."
They are.
I thought for sure you were around the corner. You were about to say, "Smile, you're on candid camera."
Yeah, no. It's so good. Everything's so good. It's so good. And you know, and what? You got to go.
She wasn't right, because that second day muffalata, man, and after sitting in the fridge, It soaks up all the olive salad
and like, oh God. So I got to tell you, highlight, one of the top five highlights of the year for me that doesn't involve my family or anything, was sitting right down next to you at Harbor Seafood and just sharing a meal with all the stuff that I've been telling you about for months. I mean, it just got, you know, you hear little catchphrases like, "Oh my God, they fry crab claws?" Yeah, and like, "I don't know what a boudin ball is, but my God, they're good," you know? And like, just.
Well, you talked it up a lot. And what was hilarious was, you know, I flew in and I was picking up my buddy Thorne Sparkman, who I've been fishing with for the better part of 35 years. And I had a couple of hours before his plane landed. He was delayed. And I couldn't remember the places you told me to go. And I'm just driving around and I'm like, "Well, that looks good." And I end up there. And that was Harbor Seafood. Yeah. And they were, it looked incredible, but they were like jam packed. So then I'm like, "All right, I'm going to find another place." I drive down the street and there's Drago's, which is the other place you told me about, but I had no idea.
The original Dragos, the one in Metairie, not the one in New Orleans on the riverfront.
So I had a margarita.
I could smell when you were sending me pictures. I could smell the char grilled oysters. I was in physical pain.
Char grilled oysters, and I was like, holy shit, I've just completely gone down a rabbit hole.
Yeah. I mean, I it's just, I guess, you know, what I'd like to tell the listeners is, you know, Lou, you were a very well-traveled fisherman. You know, you definitely haven't gone to all the places on your bucket list, but I think you've gone to a good chunk of them. To me, it's the pinnacle. There's so many awesome things. The people, the fishing, the food, the culture. You don't have to have a passport. You know, what did I tell you? I said, you're going to be there for about a day and you're going to realize that when people ask you, when they see you in a store or something and they say, hi, how are you today? They're actually asking you. It's not just something that they're saying. It's like part of them cares. And it's really, you know, for people who haven't gone, go. Because it's not just the fishing, right?
Yeah, I totally. And you're right. I mean, I've traveled all around the world to fish, but to have that quality of a fishery, and I'm speaking hypothetically right now, having not.
We'll get into that in a second.
And to be able to get there without having to go through customs and have a passport. I mean,
and it takes some puddle jumper with like a 14-year-old kid flying the plane. It was
3 hours there and back, and then to have the culture and the food and as you said, just the hospitality of the people. It was very unique because, you know, even if you go to other destination fisheries here in the United States, oftentimes, you know, outside of the fishing, you could be anywhere in America. But as soon as you land in New Orleans, Louis Armstrong Airport, you know you're in a very unique situation, and it feels like you're in another country, even though you're not. And it was an incredible experience.
You know, remember when I told you, like, every time the wheels touch down, I just have like a smile on my face, no matter how hard the flight was or the traveling or me arguing with the flight attendant that fly rods can fit in an overhead compartment. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the second that I hear that in the plane and they touch, I'm just like, you know what? I know a couple of things. I'm going to really enjoy myself. Going to eat some great food. I'm going to have some shots and some awesome fish. And I'm going to be around people that I love, you know, just the whole, it's so home to me, you know, family ties there and everything. But you know, I'm so glad you enjoyed it with me. And Lou, I'll tell you, everyone hears me cry and whine about how hard a sheep's head is to catch and how miserable the weather is every time we fish that goddamn tournament. It's like no sane person would go out in a 36-foot center console, much less a micro skiff. You know what I mean? No sane human would be like, yeah. And then pick the most persnickety asshole fish short of a permit that ever swam to catch on a fly, right? So, like, back me up on this, right? I mean, it's a grind, right? It's a grind.
It's a grind, but I mean, I'm still recovering from this. I'm in therapy. I'm completely having to rethink my entire approach to life as a result of these stupid fish, but. Yeah, I mean, you know,
they don't come easy, Lou. They don't come easy.
But they are, I will say, if you get that fly in front of them and you get the shot, right? It's hard enough to get the shot. Like, we looked hard for those fish. I probably only got two legit shots, to be honest. But you get it in front of them, you get a good fly, you work it back. They're going to follow that fly. I mean, they're not disinterested. It's not like with some other asshole species that, you know, you're just waiting for them to make a complete mistake, hallucinate, eat the thing. They're interested, but it's hard. You know, it's really hard to get them to do their thing.
Oh, and if they did see, you didn't get to experience this, but when you do get them to bite, I'm just messing with you, dude.
Well, they actually bite. See, I was hooking, there just thinking it's all about hooking them.
Hooking them is a whole other thing. And then if you're, and then if God smiles on you and you're lucky enough to put a hook in the bone wall of teeth,
yeah,
then they're just going to bite through everything you have. Yeah. They'll bite through your fly rod. Like, they'll just chew the way up. I think they gotta take a hunk out of the fiberglass in the boat. Like, you don't understand. Like, there were 9 fish caught out of 47 boats in 2 days. 5 of those fish were caught by 2 teams from ASGA. So yeah, what's up?
I had nothing to do with that. I would say we got, and I'm not even talking about the 2 days of the tournament, but out of the 5 or 6 days that we fished, and we had some really tough weather, to be totally fair and honest, I would say I personally got maybe 3 or 4 legit shots. So it was tough.
The weather was absolute misery.
Yeah, I mean, we had a tough time with weather. The one good shot I got, that fish whirled around and chewed the fly, and just, I felt it for a fraction of a nanosecond, and, you know, it spit it. It was gone. I mean, it was just, I had no leverage. It was right at the boat, and
yeah,
best thing I could do was to just try to strip my line hand and get my rod up high. Oh, yeah. That's it. It was gone.
Well, look, you know. Hey, so you saved yourself like going through all that hooking one and then the sheer panic of being like, I have a 1 in 50 chance of landing this thing because it's going to bite my hook in half. Right. Yeah. Like, there's just so many things that you can't control that when you're actually holding it and looking at it and you caught it, I mean, there is a, because they're different than permit, you know, because permit, it's like, I hate saying it's all the permit. It's like a numbers game. Like, you just got to find the fish that's going to eat. But like you said, like, there's a little bit of like a puppy dog in a sheep's head. Like, they see that fly and they'll follow it and you get their attention and they're a little aggressive.
Yeah.
But it's that commitment, you know, it's that actually hitting the fly. You can get their attention, you can get them to come to the fly, but it's closing and the deal.
You know, you can get up on them because the water, you know, at least when we were there, was not super gin clear. I mean, we didn't see them until we were pretty close, but they did not necessarily see us. The first fish we ran into on the very first day, if you remember, we had that storm coming in. Actually, it was before you came.
I remember.
And this crazy storm coming in. We got in for like, you know, an hour, 2 hours. And there was this huge sheep's head. And we were at a cut bank, right? It was a red cut bank with grass coming over it. And this thing, and Thorn was on the bow. And this thing is, its nose is pointed perpendicular into the bank.
Yeah.
And Thorn is like, what the hell is that thing doing? It was eating snails off of it. And, you know, how do you even get a fly there that it can see, right?
Welcome to my world, Thorn.
The next couple times we get up on them, and they're literally tipping up in the water, but their snouts are down and it's muddy. And you somehow have to get that, sink that fly that it can actually see it. But it was, you know, it was super technical. It was super fun. I'm definitely sort of obsessed right now. I feel like, you know, given the right conditions, I could do some damage. I just, we took a beating. We took a rookie beating. That's all I can say.
Yeah, dude, it's like you can't explain it to people who haven't done it before. You can't, like, look, they're really, really good fishermen fishing that tournament. I mean, really. And all you need to know is in 2 days, 9 fish were caught, 47 boats. Of yeah. people who spend 200 days plus on the water and know yeah. every stinking inch of yeah. like, I mean, the hardest thing when you're there is from the time that you leave where you launch the boat until the time you get to the first spot, you just, your head's on a swivel and you're like, that looks like a great spot.
I know.
That looks like a great spot. That totally looks like a great spot. Like, how do you even pick? How do you even yeah. start?
Yep. No, I was super impressed by the guides. Their knowledge of those, you know, the bayou, the those flats, the little creeks, the ponds, you know, they had a plan. They knew exactly what was going on. They were, you know, we had, even though we don't have the tide down there that we have up where we are, like, there was a lot of tide. It was a pretty big moon, and they were, and the wind was a factor, right? It was really keeping, pushing a lot of the water out of the skinnier areas, and but they had a plan. They figured it out. They found the fish. It was just hard. It was hard conditions, and I'm psyched to get back there when it's a little more favorable.
Lou, what I would tell you is that all the guides spoke very highly of your fishing ability. So they believe me, if you were terrible, I would have heard it. and that is not what I heard. I heard that you and Thorne and your son were an absolute joy to have on the boat. And, you know, if anything, they felt a little bad because we all kind of got the short end on the stick with weather. You know, it's really, I guess the takeaway is, like, even if the deck is stacked against you, it's fishing. You are at the mercy of Mother Nature. And yep. every time you go out, and, you know, sometimes you get real lucky and sometimes you don't. And, you know, I would be remiss not to brag on my fishing partner. Man, we were in water that was so shallow over just scattered oysters that I couldn't have put my hand in the water and, like, splashed my face if I got something in my eye without cutting my hand on an oyster. It was so shallow. And we're watching, like, 2 or 3 redfish, and it was utterly amazing. In, I mean, 8 inches of water, and they just disappeared.
Yeah.
And then they'd reappear 10 feet away. And it was just, you're like, how can a fish that big vanish in 8 inches of water, 40 feet from you? It's beyond comprehension. And, you know, Taylor, that fish, I mean, it showed itself like one dorsal spine, just boop, and he went in there like a sniper from the 10th Mountain Division, man. It was just, I mean, one shot, that's it, that's all you got, boom, put it right in between his eyes, and that fish ate that fly before it hit the bottom. Boom, and off to the races, man. And that was, you know, it's just moments like that that you get there that you don't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you aren't thinking about anything, you know, that whole, like, reptilian brain thing takes over, and it's just, you're just on autopilot. And I think that's the coolest part. That's what we all want, right? You don't want to be thinking when you're on a boat.
Yeah, no, I love it. And there's so much good water to explore there. And I just can't wait to go back, you know, when the conditions are more favorable. I know it's hot as hell there in the summer, but from everything I've heard, the summer's incredible. And obviously, you know, the legendary fall run, October, November.
Well, hey, you know what? You know what you got to look forward to next? And we should probably talk about this. You're heading down to Miami, and you're actually going to be given a lecture at a kind of like an invite NOAA meeting on Got One.
Yep.
How cool is that?
Super cool. Super excited.
And then you get to fish with Cody. And he's been catching like I don't know, barn door sized Jack Crevalle. So you get hopefully the weather will take pity upon you. But let's talk about I know that's what you're really looking forward to down there, but let's talk about the NOAA thing. You know, so what are you going to be doing, man? I think that's pretty cool. They just kind of reached out to you out of the blue, and next thing you know, you're given a lecture to NOAA about data and phishing apps.
Well, listen, I mean, obviously, it's not out of nowhere. I mean, I'm super appreciative of all our collaboration and the advocacy from ASGA. I mean, you know this as well as anyone, Tony. When we first started talking to fisheries scientists and the management community, there was a lot of skepticism, and I totally get it. There was a lot of skepticism about how apps like Got One could provide data that would be reliable and relevant for scientists. And I have to say, after a lot of work, a lot of conversations, a lot of deep diving, and showing them how serious we are about what we're doing, you know, not to mention which there have been issues with the data collection from more scientific and more established sources, I think there's a willingness, an unprecedented willingness to collaborate with folks like us, ASGA, Got One, et cetera, to look at how citizen science, and by which I mean really data collected from recreational anglers like us, can contribute to augment, amplify the knowledge base that allows us to understand what's happening with our fish and our fisheries and make better management decisions. And so, you know, this was, as you know, Tony, when we were in DC this fall, we met with folks from National Marine Fisheries Service at NOAA. They were very welcoming and gracious. Lots of really good conversations about, you know, how they could leverage the data that we had. There have been a number of, you know, research reports on the use of citizen science apps, recreational apps for data and fisheries management. And you know, then we got a call early this year from folks at NOAA saying, hey, listen, and we heard about the work that you're doing with ASGA and that you're doing with Massachusetts DMF around striped bass. We're putting together the first ever, nationally funded conference on the use of citizen science data from apps like Got One. Would you guys be willing to come and do a presentation and really spotlight what you're doing with the Got One app? And so we're super proud. We're one of a small number of organizations, apps that have been asked to come and talk about the work we're doing in collaboration with ASGA and with MassDMF around striped bass catch and release handling. And, you know, we have no pride of ownership. We're super hopeful that the successes that we've had and what we've learned can help power really a revolution in capturing high quality data at scale about the fish that we love to catch from recreational anglers.
You know, it was funny, Lou, because you're just getting into this world, and you sent me over the invite to the call that, you know, was going to introduce you to this idea from NOAA staff. And I was like, oh, wow, that's the director. that's the assistant director. That's the regional director. Like, it wasn't, these were highfalutin people, you know? And I think it really speaks to the, yes, okay, of course, it's the right place and time because their data collection system has, you know, some flaws, some potential flaws have been uncovered. And now is the time to, now is the right place and time to reach out and start looking at things that they just wholesale rejected as soon as the word came out of your mouth. And that's definitely changed. But, you know, big but here, it's the quality of the product. Well, because there's an awful lot of apps out there that aren't invited. Matter of fact, there's only like three or four that are. So, you know, from taking this to nothing to clearly being singled out in the top under a handful, and given an opportunity to present on what your vision is on it, that's no small feat. Now you said it, you used a term a second ago and you said at scale. And I think, you know, I know what you're talking about, but let's talk about the scale of the data that we have provided for MassDMF and their very important, very well done, very robust catch and release mortality study, you know, that we're going to start hearing a lot more about in the upcoming months. So, you know, when you're talking at scale, Lou, we provided one heck of a body of data for them, didn't we?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and it's just the beginning, right? So, I mean, we've been in earnest in operation only since the beginning of really? Really for a year, right?
Yeah. I mean not even like it was May and we were still beta testing stuff and not really talking about it and just having a couple of people use it and get back to us.
Yeah.
So it's hadn't been a year.
To put it in perspective, right? I mean, like when I participated in recreational striped bass surveys in the past, and you had to, you know, take a scale and a measurement and you put it in a physical envelope and you sent it in. Maybe I sent in 10 sort of samples, you know, 10 data points. And that was a high watermark. And frankly, I never did it after the first season because I didn't get a lot of return value from that. It was kind of unidirectional. I didn't get any insights back. So just to put it in perspective, like in 2023, you know, less than a complete year, we had over 4,000 striped bass logged in the Got One app. 4,000.
I didn't even know that. I thought it was smaller. I thought the number was, I'm not even joking. That's crazy.
4,000 fish, we know, general location, date, weather conditions, water temperature, tide, current, you know, moon phase, you name it. Not to mention, if folks participated in the MassDMF study, we know, you know, condition of the fish, hook location, all sorts of things about the actual, how long it took to land the fish, how long it took before the fish was released. So imagine that over 10 years. I mean, I would be shocked if we didn't have data on 100, 200, 300,000, a million striped bass caught. We will have more data over time about striped bass with more degree of fidelity and specificity than we have ever had in the history of humans fishing for striped bass.
Yeah, and not only that, but each individual person that is part of that half million fish in 10 years, they're going to be a lot better fishermen. You know, you said it yourself, like you sent 10 scales in and then it was unidirectional, and you're like, why am I doing this? Like, what is even happening? And I mean, let's face it, let's be honest, we're a science-based organization, but like, if I was going to list the top 10 qualities of scientists, communication would not be in the top 5,000. They're just not, that's just not, you know, it's just, it's not the personality type, and that's fine. Not all of them can be, not everyone can be a master communicator like me. You know, it's, I'm just, Lou forgot to mute his mic and couldn't hold back.
Sorry, the laughter. Where's the mute button?
Yeah, yeah, hit the mute button. Come on. I thought you were the data guy. But you know, like, you know, Lou, you look at it and this is not unidirectional. As a matter of fact, you know, y'all have gone to crazy lengths to have got one actually be a teaching tool. It's really pretty cool. I loved the conversation that we had the other day when we were talking about friends who were thinking about opening up lodges and how Got One, the lodge, would over a year or two, you would have such a competitive advantage over all your neighboring lodge owners that it almost wouldn't be fair.
Yep. Yep.
And I mean, how powerful is that? Right. Like that's the cool stuff.
Yeah. And I think the ability to, you know, I'm a big believer that customers should control how much of the data they share. And this is the thing about a lot of apps out there. And we know about social media is, you give up all your data. That is the quid pro quo. And, you know, we take a kind of an opposite approach, which is we share the aggregated, generalized data with scientists, but you control it at the end of the day. You control what you share, what you want to keep private, because, you know, we are fishing in an age where information is like gold, and you know, you don't share that data casually. You share it selectively. And yeah, to your point, if I have, you know, a group of 5-10 anglers who, maybe more than that, but a small set of anglers who I share data with, now I select what I'm going to share with them, but I'm fairly generous with the data I share because I get data back from them, and I know that they won't abuse it just as I won't abuse my access to their data. And that makes us, as a friend group, much more effective as fishermen. And I'm sure most of the listeners here have their groups that they share that kind of data with too, whether it's on a Facebook, you know, group or on Messenger or on WhatsApp or on Instagram. You know, but imagine if you could share that data, that information, not just anecdotally, but with actual data insights. Here are the tides that are working the best in these areas. Here are the water temperatures that are, you know, sort of optimal for this species in this region. You know, here are the currents that really make a difference. That's what makes this more fun for all of us. I mean, fishing is like so many other, you know, obsessive sports. It's about cracking a code. It's about problem solving. And we all want to get better at that. We all want to feel like we're not just doing it randomly. We're learning. You know, you said a learning app. I mean, that's what makes this exciting for me, is learning more about this fishery, about these fish that we love, but doing it in a way that...
Hey, and Lou, it's like school, right? The more you go, the more you learn.
More you go, the more you
learn. It's a great thing to tell your wife. I have to have at least 10 more data inputs on my app. I'm not going to get this moon phase, this cycle of the moon. It's going to be a big, you know, black hole in my data until next year. I have to go fishing tonight. You don't want to do that to me. Like, it's, I need this data. You know what I mean? Like, oh, there's an argument that ought to throw them for a loop. You know, like, come on, let me get the data. So again, another hysterical thing that I saw today was, you know, this is important for scientists. It sounds a little ridiculous, but you know, there's the CPUE, which is catch per unit effort. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge, crazy important piece of data for the statisticians to understand. So Lou was showing me his latest design of a skunk. because that's the one, you know, we heard that from so many scientists that, you know, we need to know when you don't catch something too. And so we have Lou will be rolling out a skunk.
I think we all
will have to press that button in a given year, Lou. It happens to all of us, right?
Well, it certainly happened for me in Louisiana, but
I didn't say that.
So I love it. It's actually hysterical. We were thinking long and hard about like, okay, so, you know, you're only recording your successful catches, but there's so many days where you go out and you're completely, you know, flummoxed. How do you actually record, you know, a trip where you didn't catch anything? And I had this idea of, well, what if we added a species that was a skunk? And you log it just the way you do a striped bass or a sheep's head or a redfish. But now you have data that says, I actually didn't catch anything on this trip. And that's a unit of effort, because otherwise we have no idea that you actually fished. You have no idea that you actually fished that date. So I'm super excited about the skunk. We're going to have to name the skunk. Well, maybe we have to have an ASGA got one competition to name the skunk.
I mean, you know, we're about the same age. Be really hard not to call him Peppy.
I was gonna say,
right? Like, oh, hello, my love. You know, like, come on, man. Like, how could you? Is there any other name it could be? All like the 20-year-old kids are like, what, Peppy? Like, what are you talking about? You know, just Google it. You'll see it on YouTube. Kind of a little bit of a stalker, creepy skunk on Bugs Bunny. We'll just put it that way. When you look at it as an adult, his activities become questionable. As a kid, it's just kind of funny. So, you know, Lou, it's all of this stuff is so weird. So about, I don't know, man, I don't even. My dog broke my phone. I'm a bit out of sorts today. So I'm going to say a month and a half ago, we had an opportunity to speak with a scientist from MassDMF named Greg Skomel. And Greg's got one hell of a resume. He's also a little long in the tooth like me. And he's been around for a while and he's kind of seen it. And he is actually on a false albacore work group. And we were just talking to him about that ASMFC false albacore work group and what was going on. And I'm sitting there looking at him on the, so like, you know, he's up in like, I think New Bedford, Mass. And I'm looking at him. I'm like, I know this guy. You know, it's a small world. It's like, y'all know each other. And I'm like, where the hell? And then I was like, holy shit. Atlantic Great White Shark Conservancy. That's how I know him. He's the executive director of the Atlantic Great White Shark Conservancy that does all those cool trips and all the stuff that we've seen out on Cape Cod. You know, they have the, it's almost like the tuna harpooning boats. And they'll go and put the tags in the sharks in real shallow water. Just, you know, wild stuff and trying to learn about the sharks and make sure people don't get eaten. Because there's quite a few of them out there now. So I was talking to Greg and I, you know, about Albies, and I was like, I'm going to mention that on this little Zoom meeting. And we're going to, and as soon as I started telling him about it, you know, you're talking about a super smart guy who is at the pinnacle of, you know, what kids graduating with their PhD right now, where they want to be. And it took him about 5 seconds listening to me. And then next thing you know, we're on a call with Lou, Greg, and Dirk, who's hysterical. and next thing you know, drum roll, please. Lou's app is going to be collecting data for the Atlantic Great White Shark Conservancy. There's what, 800 individuals that visit Cape Cod region, 800 different great white sharks, and Lou's app is going to be able to save them a considerable amount of resources, considerable, and be able to identify these 800, you know, give or take a few individuals, and hopefully, fingers crossed, accelerate their research and make life a little bit easier on them. And this is Greg's as legit as it comes, right? You take one look at him and you're like, he's a fishy dude. Like you just know, right? So Lou, I mean, how'd you feel about that? That's pretty, a year ago, you did not think that was going to happen, right? It's pretty cool stuff. Like that's.
Yeah. I mean, Greg's incredible. And, you know, we are, for those of you who've listened to the past, you know, couple podcasts, you know, that we're working really, really seriously right now on, so we now have the ability, it's in beta, so we haven't quite released it in the production app, but we have the ability to identify most of the major species that we log in the app through AI if you log a photo of the fish. So, you know, you catch a striped bass.
So you don't have to tell the app it's a redfish.
You don't have to tell the app it's a redfish. It knows.
You don't have to tell the app it's a striper. Well. You take that picture and you don't even have to hit the striper button.
That's right. So that is working super well. And you mentioned Dirk. So Dirk is a guy that I've worked with and know in on a range of AI projects that I'm working on right now, who's, you know, a real expert in sort of cutting edge AI applications, originally based in Berlin. He's now here in the US. He and I have worked together on a number of different things over the years, and he's built some incredible models to help us with that. But what we're really, really focused on now, which again, we've sort of teased in previous episodes, is we are starting to make real progress on the identification of individual fish. And so we're working with folks at University of Chicago, Woods Hole, Striped Bass Magic on striper, individual striper identification. We're working. There's a lot of work being done that we're, you know, leveraging and keeping in touch with on trout identification. We think great whites are actually a really good candidate for individual fish identification, partly because of the quality of work that Greg's done. So he's got an extensive library of not only several hundred great white sharks, but segmented by fins, tails, you know, head markings. And you know, as you can imagine, great whites are actually quite a bit more individually distinctive than with some other species.
Lou, I can't believe he was telling us he'd take the interns by the ankles and just hold them underwater and tell them to take, like, when the shark is swimming by. All those new interns, like the old interns, are going to be like, man, you didn't know what it was like before this app came along. They just held them under, man, said, hold your breath. You know, when we see the bubble stop, interns, we'll pull you back up.
The interns will be happy to hear that. Yeah. So imagine, you know, so when these great whites are getting up in the shallow waters in the Cape in the summer, you know, they're taking boats out. And as you mentioned, they've got GoPros on like long poles. Instead of a harpoon, it's a long pole with a GoPro. And the GoPro, you know, they're following these fish through the flats, through the shallow waters, and they're taking pictures of them from every side. It's a pretty, you know, human intensive, resource intensive, time intensive initiative. So our vision is, you know, picture this. We build a AI model that can identify individual great whites from photographs, and not from video, right? Video, and we can isolate frames of the video and say, oh, here we have a frame of this video that shows a dorsal fin. And now we're going to like denoise everything and just focus on that dorsal fin. And we can match that dorsal fin to Tony the Great White, right? So now imagine that that's not even just done with a GoPro shooting video on the end of a pole, that we can deploy, ocean drones with GoPros submerged by a line or on a gimbal that are sort of pre-programmed to fan out and take certain paths and monitor certain areas. And as soon as they detect a shark in their range of view, they're starting to film. And all of that's getting pre-processed through very small AI models sitting on compact computers, what we call Raspberry Pis, that sit on the actual drone itself. And then that gets synced up with our larger cloud-based AI model and is providing positive identification of those sharks in real time. So that's the vision of where we're getting to. And I think we're going to be able to do that in the next, I'd say, 6 to 12 months without any question.
All the interns, class of 2027, just breathed a sigh of relief, man.
Except they don't have internships.
They're like, that Skomal guy's not going to hold me underwater. Some freaking GoPro. He can't afford the big sticks. He just gives us the 2-foot sticks. You know what I mean? I think everybody knows. I'm just kidding. But, you know, Lou, it just, okay. It's so cool that you start with an idea, you get a little bit of traction. You know, you're working on fish that are important to fishermen. And then all of a sudden, somebody from a similar discipline, but a completely different animal, is like, what can it do? Like, wait, what? And it's just, you know, mind blown and frankly, ready to go all in on it. I think because Greg is not as beholden to, you know, he doesn't have to deal with the volume of data from a striped bass or a bluefish, yeah, or, you know, he has the seniority and the flexibility to give a thumbs up on this and say, I'm working with you. I'm hitching my wagon to you. Let's go. And it's kind of that, you know, when I see that, I'm like, that is how the West was won. Right. Mm-hmm. That is America in a bottle right there. Like, you see something, you grab it with both hands, you know, something that combined with your heart, your soul, your experience says, this is going to be cool. Never thought I'd be sat talking this, you know, kind of stuff, and really saw the value in it. So, I mean, that it's got to make you super proud. It should make you super. And then also just to meet somebody as cool, you know.
Yeah, just for sure.
Cool as Greg, you know, just a.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the main thing, is being able to meet guys like Greg and, you know, all of folks who are serious scientists who are, you know, really committed to trying to understand our fish and our fisheries better. And the idea that we can help provide tools that could radically change their ability to do what they need to do is what fuels us. And, you know, yes, I'm proud of what we've done, but I have to say my overwhelming emotion is like a sense of like, we have so much we need to do. A sense of urgency and inadequacy. Like, you know, I just wish we could run even faster. There's just so much we could do. We're just constrained by, you know, time and resource, but it's pretty. If you told me a year ago where we'd be today, I would have said you're crazy, and I bet that we'll be seeing that a year from now too. So just well, here's
the perfect segue. Here's the crown jewel of what we've done so far. So I'm gonna let you just talk about it, because I want you to be able to share it with the audience, and I'll, you know, fill any holes from a policy perspective. But this is, look, this isn't a, you know, this is I'm gonna set Lou up. This is a big one. This isn't a, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of some species that, I don't know. This is not a milkfish from the Seychelles. This is not a great white shark. This is something that literally supports coastal economies from North Carolina to Texas. And it is, you know, it is culturally, economically, you know, fishing traditions, everything good and wholesome in the sport. I'm gonna let Lou talk about it, but because this fish is so important, so iconic, it makes it so much more special what we are going to be able to do. And I'll let Lou take it away and start from wherever you want to start.
I assume you're talking about redfish.
Yeah.
Not sheep's head.
You mean the tattoo on sheep's head? Support psychiatry offices and, exactly, and prescription, yeah, medication, yeah, for anxiety. Yeah, right. No, sheep's head support bad drinking habits and I don't even know what. So no, redfish.
Yeah. So, you know, we're super, super excited that we have partnerships now with both Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, LDWF, for Louisiana redfish, and with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, ASMFC, for Atlantic Coast redfish. So one of the things that we've added to the app is sort of what we call geofencing. So, you know, we can create a virtual region in the app. And if you catch a fish in that region, let's say in Louisiana territorial waters or along the Atlantic coastline, we know that you caught, and you log that you caught a redfish. We know you caught a redfish. And if you catch it on the Atlantic coastline, it will pop up a little, you know, menu that asks you whether you'd like to contribute, you know, congratulations on your redfish caught on the Atlantic coast. Would you like to contribute the data around that redfish to ASMFC for fisheries science? And then it gives you kind of like the MassDMF survey for striped bass, very simple, you know, 5-6 question survey about how you caught it, the condition of the fish, you know, so on and so on. And same thing in Louisiana. If you catch a redfish in Louisiana territorial waters, it'll say, hey, would you like to contribute the data to LDWF? Here's a short questionnaire. Now, the reason that this is so incredibly important is, unlike striped bass or most other game fish that are both caught recreationally and commercially, there is no commercial fishery for redfish. And so there is very little data about redfish.
Well, in Louisiana, but there's a small one in North Carolina.
North Carolina. Yeah. But for the most part, the amount of data about redfish is de minimis. And so this gives, and the quality of that data and the fidelity is fairly low. This now gives us the ability to ask recreational anglers to contribute data about the fish they caught at the moment they caught it, with all of the data that we capture about it in real time, and not rely on a dockside survey or a phone survey 3 or 6 months later, where an angler is trying to recollect the nature of what they caught, is just going to be an incredible boon to fishery scientists and managers for a species that is incredibly near and dear to us, as you said, Tony. So this has been deeply embraced by the guides, and you know, we're looking forward to their getting the word out to their sports and giving us a chance to have a view around what's happening with our redfish up and down the Atlantic coast and in Louisiana, which is really one of the primary watersheds, obviously, for redfish.
Yeah, and this was not easy. This was not like two phone calls and, you know, oh, this is great, we'll use it. This was working with stock assessment scientists, very good at their job. And really, you know, Lou, what we did was almost simultaneously, the Atlantic and Louisiana were working on some pretty groundbreaking stock assessments for redfish. And we aren't always like this. I hope one day we will always be like this. But as an association, we would like to come with solutions instead of criticisms. And it was there in black and white in both stock assessments at the very end of the stock assessment, either the second to last or the last section, is always recommendations. And the scientists are very transparent, and they will write down what recommendations are that would enhance future stock assessments for the species. You know, let's do more surveys. Let's look at this area instead of that area. Let's throw a couple of more research tracks in there. Both stock assessments, like first was definitely in the top three recommendations, and there were quite a few. Was basically saying we have no data on release fish. We have no idea how many people release fish, and we were like, we can tell you that. And that's when the magic started to happen, right? That was the cool stuff, like physically showing them that we can fill in this big data gap for you, and we're happy to do it, resource first. I think that's where we turned a corner, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, listen, Tony, you and ASGA played a critical role in that, because we wouldn't even have been able to get in the door. You guys were having those conversations, and kudos to LDWF and ASMFC.
I don't think I'm allowed in the door in one of those places anymore because of those conversations. But you know, Lou, sometimes you just got to kick the door down, right? Sometimes you're let in and you can have a nice conversation, and other times you just kind of kick it down. And
I will say, to their credit, I mean, they saw the value of it. You know, once the door was kicked down, they saw the value of it. And, you know, they've been great partners, and we're super excited and super proud to be partnering with them on it. And as I said, the response from the guide community has been amazing. I mean, I think the guides are super excited that they can play a role in collecting this data in a way that helps to shape policy going forwards. And they're not just sort of, you know, on the receiving end of data that they didn't have a part in collecting. And so there's a lot of commitment to getting this data collection right. And we think this is a model, and that, you know, not only a national, but ultimately an international model for how we can work together as a recreational angling community with the commercial community and with fisheries scientists and managers to do the right thing on behalf of our fish and our fisheries.
Yeah. And that is, Boyd, great job there, man. That's all that we want. All that we want is more fish for us to put hooks in bring to the side of the boat, lean over, smile, and watch him swim away. That's what all
or
this
in my
is.
Case, I put hooks
I
in
didn't
all.
Say that. Dude, you're the one. You're going to, in a week, Lou's going to be like, Tony was so mean to me on the podcast. I haven't said a word about the skunking. Not a word. I told you I wouldn't. I said I wouldn't be mean. I will, Lou, when our eyes met that first day, I thought you were going to pick up like an oyster knife and try to just end me right there. Like, that's, I swear, I was like, you just saw the shit eating grin on my face, and I was like, don't make it worse, dude. For months, Lou was telling me how he was gonna do all these things, and I was like, man,
no, I don't think that's how it went, my friend.
I don't think that's how it went for you either, man. So, you know, we don't, it's amazing because we can really only announce this stuff after it's like signed, sealed, delivered. We know we're doing it, right? Because you feel like there's just a lot of shitty people in the world who maybe have a little or a little jealous. So I don't want to tell y'all what we're working on that we haven't signed, sealed, and delivered yet, but we're working with, you know, whatever on whatever fish. But there's more coming. Like, this isn't, it's not like we're all patting ourselves on the back. Like Lou said, there's urgency everywhere. And this thing is, it's so incredibly scalable. It's so, we gave a presentation, well, Lou gave a presentation in Louisiana. And the questions were unbelievable. I live on the Pacific coast. Can you help us out with this? Oh my gosh. I do a, what was the young lady? I do a triple tail tournament in Florida and there's definitely been a decline. Can you help us with that? And you know, that's, to me, that just shows that people really honestly do want to help. They want to help. No one has been able to give them a vehicle to do so. And I think Lou and his team have built that. And that's pretty cool. You know, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there. But the formula seems to be working. You know, hard work, honesty, integrity, friendship, everything that you kind of hope as a adult guy in this world that there's some semblance of, you know, something left of what you saw in those John Wayne movies and friendships and everything. And it's, you know, it's kind of working out like it. And I honestly don't think anyone has a product that does the same things as got one. I just don't.
What? I appreciate that, Tony. And obviously we've gained a lot from the relationship with ASGA and all of your partners, and we've learned a lot. And I think, you know, it's been a big boon for us to start by building an app, you know, sort of from the guide perspective out rather than trying to make another, you know, Facebook, Instagram for fishing. Like, you know,
I think other people started with like a business plan, Lou, that was like, we want a million users.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like those Instagram pages that have like 100,000 followers or likes or whatever it is, but they have no, you know, it's not real. It's not like that foundation isn't rock solid. We started this with friends that we know and trusted and kind of took a slow and steady approach and built a core. And
our users are like really avid and really dedicated. And I get so many emails every day from, you know, all of you out there using the app with great ideas.
Are you still getting flooded with emails?
Oh yeah. Every day. You know, and I answer every single one of them. And, you know, we've learned a lot and we've made a lot of modifications based on what people have asked for. And the biggest thing that we get asked for, which is really telling, is, hey, you know, we need species X included, which just tells me that folks are using it and they want to use it for fish that they're catching. And, you know, we're adding fish just as fast as we can. But that's been, you know, the big, I haven't made a dime off of this thing yet. At some point or another, I would like to, but what I really have appreciated is just the community and the feedback and, you know, and the advocacy and the devotion from users out there. You know, that means more to me than anything, knowing that, you know, people are actually using it and enjoying it, and it's helping them be better fishermen.
I think from where we started last year, which was zero, you know, ground zero, to I think what we'll see by, you know, September of this year, I think it's going to be shocking. I think you're going to see, I think y'all are going to see an increase in users, an increase in species, geographic area, you know, bigger, more awesome, loyal following. I really think the growth it hasn't happened yet. The big push, I think, that we're going to see in 2024. And that's really exciting. It's really exciting to be a part of something like that. And it really could fundamentally change what we know about these species. That we've got our fingers crossed that will be helpful.
Yep. No, we're super excited about it. And, you know, it we rely on everyone out there logging their fish and using the app. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that for many of us, we fish the way we fished forever. And anything that's new in our workflow is hard to process. But I will tell you right now that once you start using the app, you will never go back, because you have visibility into, you know, your fishing history and what drives success, and the ability to scroll. I mean, just the ability to go back and say, you know, hey, I caught my first permit last year. Where was that again? What was the water temperature? What were the tides? I mean, you know, and show me the picture of it. So incredibly valuable. It just adds so much joy to the process of being a fisherman.
We all want to be better, right? I mean, you don't go out there and you want to suck and not many people. Look, we're always positive towards science. We didn't criticize NOAA with the FES stuff. I would tell anyone to go through the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of blogs that we've written, the 125, 30, whatever podcasts we've done. We've never said a bad thing about a scientist, not once. But getting them to turn that corner and start figuring out how to incorporate this data versus going off collective memory that may be 6 months, a year old, I think the future is a lot brighter. I think it's a lot brighter. And just because you did something one way for a long time doesn't mean that's the only way you can do it. And we're not saying throw the surveys out the window. We're not saying, so we're saying use both. That's the message.
Yeah.
And for somebody like Lou, who works on this stuff every day in education, you know, I can't count how many times he's been like, my God, you guys are in the Stone Age. Like, you know, Lou looks at it and it's like, beep, boop, 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 you know, little calculations in his head. And he's like, guys are like Neanderthals. Like, you're throwing rocks. We got laser beams, you know, like, come on, man, get with the program. And I just think it was the right place, right time. So, you know, wrap this up, the sheepy is hard. If you are a masochist and you held the flashlight for your father when he fixed his truck at night, 10 o'clock at night, when you were about 7 years old, this is for you. Go out and try and catch one of these things on a fly. So that's part one. Part two, you know, Lou's going to tell us all about Noah and hopefully redemption at the end of a 30-pound Jack Crevalle here in a few short weeks. We're going to keep collecting piles of stuff on Stripers this year to help Mass DMF, who, by the way, is loaded. You know, we've been giving love to Greg Scomel while he works for Mass DMF. I mean, just a loaded state agency, the right agency to be the jumping off place for Got One for sure. We're going to be dealing with great white sharks of all things. Who would have thought it? And now, you know, we have a good on-ramp to start providing data to stock assessment scientists to better understand the population dynamics and the trends in redfish. And that's pretty fantastic when it's been about 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah. More to come.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. Well, Lou, we always love having you on here.
Thanks, buddy.
You know, I just wait for my brand new phone that is actually functioning and doesn't have a, I swear, man, I swear, 12:44 last night, man. I was like, are you kidding? Like, I don't need this today. Like, happy fucking Monday, buddy. You know, dink, and your whole screen's just gone. It's just gone. But, you know, Lou, can't wait to hear about Noah. Can't wait to see my phone go off with you and Tom holding a double of behemoth tackle destroying jacks. You know, I think there's just great things ahead. And, you know, I'm excited to be sharing the ride with you, buddy. So.
Well, I appreciate all your support. It's been incredible, invaluable to us. And you've been an incredible thought partner on all this. And I've learned a lot from you and the whole gang. And, you know, we're excited to continue your journey too. And by the way, we're adding Jack Crevalle to the Got One Species list. Yeah. In time for Tom and my trip down to
Cody.
You know, I know a guy.
Oh, boy.
Big shout out to Isabel Young, who is my daughter Elena's roommate, who does all the art, the species art.
Lou, if anyone likes beautiful. That art on the Got One app, the species art, you know, send a message to comments at saltwaterguidesassociation.org. If you like that art, we can put you in touch with the artist. She's a young lady with a lot of talent and is absolutely finding her way. And each new species that comes up is a little bit cooler and cooler. And, you know, we've kind of just another one of those folks, man, on the other side of this, that's growing in the right direction. You know what I mean?
She's never caught any of those fish. She's actually upstairs with us tonight having dinner. So I gave her a lot of praise. And
you gotta get her out on your boat, man. Get her to reel.
I know, this season for sure. We're gonna go catch some fish so she can see what it's all about.
Have her be the one mashing that button on a striper. You know what I mean? So lots of exciting stuff, buddy. Thank you for joining us today. Thank everyone for listening, and we will catch you on the next Guidepost.
Thanks, everyone.